Hey, Nadpoles. Caldwell here to talk to you about Hero Forge, the best place to get fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from. I actually just built a version of my Underdark Gnome Illusion Wizard, Kraslo, for use in a home game my friend has been running, and it was incredibly fun getting to scroll through all the options and details to bring this mage-handed menace to life. Their easy-to-use design tools let you build your perfect miniature online using a fully 3D, in-depth character creator right in your browser. Oh, and before you ask, yes, Hero Forge has goggles, and yes, Kraslo is wearing them. So if you've been thinking about splurging on a miniature for your D&D campaign, wait no longer, because May 2nd to May 9th, Hero Forge is having a spring sale. You can get 10% off all physical miniatures and free shipping, including international shipping on all orders. The figures are tiny, but the savings are huge. To take advantage of this great offer, visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature today and check back often because new content is added every week. Ooh, good to know. Kraslo just got a hat of vermin in the campaign, and I really want to find an annoying top hat for him to wear to represent that. In the meantime, that's it for me. Thanks for listening, and happy forging.
Welcome to a little segment we're calling Behind the Screens.
Behind the screens, behind the screens.
A sneaky little peek behind the screens of RPG systems that we've yet to play. I'm kind of your host, Emily Axford.
You're the full host. Fully.
Joined by my co-host, Brian Murphy.
Hi.
My other co-host, Caldwell Tanner.
Pleased to be
what
here,
am I
full host.
Be?
And special guest.
And the real host, Noco.
Whoa.
Jake Irwin.
Whoa.
Damn.
You should call me the Fost.
The Fost. The Fost is with the most says. Okay. Today, we are actually going to be talking about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay, my friends, I have spent the past week and a half immersing myself in the world of Pathfinder, the ways in which it both resonates and differs from D&D, and it was very fun.
This is my favorite type of book club, by the way, which is
yes.
where one person reads the entire book.
And just tells everyone else.
That's kind
the
of like
kind
when
where
they
I
turn
don't have to do
books
any work.
Into movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you again for this cheese plate you prepared. You really put a lot of work into this.
I will say this weekend, Em was like, freaking Sephiroth in the Shinra mansion just going mad, pacing
oh
with
my
books,
God.
Walking around.
So hot. I enjoyed it because it reminded me of when long ago we were asked to learn Star Wars 5e.
Yeah,
and I just
you really dove in there.
Loved that system. Star Wars 5e, shout out. I miss your pages and pages of grenades.
Yes.
Okay, so before we start, I'm going to have to ask the patience of anyone who plays Pathfinder. I've only had the benefit of research, as Merv has noted, and not the luxury of play or experience, so I will undoubtedly get things wrong here or there.
We've only begun the path.
You're
Be
right.
kind.
We're finding
We're
the path.
We're trying to find the path.
Okay? Yeah.
Pathfinder finders.
Ooh, another good title.
Great title.
Fuck
we
it.
Can only
Behind
do it about
screens.
Pathfinder. Yeah.
Fuck it, I'm done
now.
With it.
Yeah.
I also need to shout out some resources I've been tapping into because the core rulebook is an intimidating 637 pages.
Yeah, I'm looking at it over there.
Wow. Thanks to Rise of the Rule Lords, No Nat Ones, and the Rules Lawyer YouTube channel, my foray into this thrilling system was actually easier than I originally thought.
And some of those are podcasts, right?
Yes. So Rise of the Rule Lords was a podcast, No Nat Ones, and the Rules Lawyer YouTube are both YouTube channels.
Right. Huh.
But I listened to them like podcasts because I'm a woman on the go.
Yes. You're just, because you're pacing.
I have places
like,
to be.
Yeah. You're just at the grocery store with your laptop.
Because just... I'm cramming. For an exam on Pathfinder and I still have to do dishes. Okay, so that's basically the preamble. Are we all ready?
I'm ready.
So ready.
Jacob Hurwitz.
Teach me.
Brian Murphy. Mm-hmm. Hugh Caldwell Tanner. Are you three ready to be inducted into the world of Pathfinder 2E?
Let's find the
You're
path.
Squeezing
First
my hand really hard.
Say my full name, I think. I've never heard that come out of your mouth before.
I will also warn you guys, this is kind of a soft pitch for some one-shots in the future because
Hell
I
yeah.
really enjoy learning it, and I'm so curious about a lot of this stuff. And obviously, that would be dependent on if our audience will endure or maybe even enjoy.
They're going to enjoy it.
Fuck them. We'll walk this path alone.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a little background on the system, but I'm going to keep it really light. I'm not going to do a history lesson.
Right on.
I'm not going to do a history lesson here. If you want a history lesson, Rise of the Rule Lords does a very good history of it. But basically, Pathfinder was born as a reaction to the lukewarm reception to D&D 4E. 4E came out. Pathfinder said, actually, we kind of missed 3.5E. Mm-hmm. But also we have some ideas on how to improve it. And that's when Pathfinder really became its own very unique system. First edition came out in March 2008. One of the main things that the lead designer wanted to fix was that he thought the basic classes in 3.5e were lackluster and didn't incentivize staying with a single class for 20 levels.
That makes sense.
Mm.
So this entire system was created to make character creation and character progression more personal and more impactful. And let me tell you, it freaking works.
I like the sound of that.
Character creation and leveling up is a fucking feast of feats, and I came hungry.
Ooh, I love that, because yeah, sometimes you level up and you're like, oh, what do I get next? And then it's kind of like
3.5 was
it's a little
worse.
Deflating.
3.5 was, there was times I leveled up as a paladin and it would literally just be an HP bump. And it would be nothing.
Yeah.
And I had to do all this custom stuff of essentially becoming a cavalier. And
then
at that point,
that.
I was able to completely break my character and be awesome. But before that, I was just leveling up and getting nothing for a long time.
So, Emily, are you saying that like in Pathfinder, leveling up kind of gives you the opportunity to like stick with a class, but maybe get a little bit of that like multi-classing flavor?
Yes.
That's
when
great.
I read this, I think, oh, I don't have to ever multi-class again if I play this, because a lot of times I multi-class to capture a vibe.
Yeah.
In Pathfinder, you're literally getting 1 to 2 feats every single level up.
Yeah, it reminds
so
me
it's
a lot
not
of
like... So it's also not like choosing a feat over...
Over an ability score.
Over like your class feature.
The ability score improvements are separate. They're happening along the way. Your skill improvements are happening along the way.
Oh, that's sick. It's like the ultimate custom character. Yes.
It feels like skill trees in video games a little bit, where it's just like you can go down different paths and make your character completely different.
There's no better feeling than when you fire up a video game and you see that big tree. You see that sphere grid unfurl before you.
Yeah.
Love it.
I've never seen that, but it sounds awesome.
Basically, that was the intent behind 1E. They make it. In 2018, Pathfinder started working on second edition, which is what we're going to be talking about. And the final rule set was published in August 2019.
Oh.
So this is actually kind of a recent, obviously Pathfinder has been around forever, but this edition was only finalized in 2019.
Yeah.
Pretty fresh.
I've never played 1E, but second edition, the one that M has done much more research on than I have at this point, but second edition is the one I looked at, and it's like very clean, like
it's
the character
clean
building.
And it's like internally very consistent. Like when I'm reading through it, and I get the thought of, oh, well, maybe I could try something else. I'm like, no, this system is made to work within itself.
Totally.
Mm.
So after a week and a half of diving for pearls in this system, here's what I found. I've made a subjective little list of my top 4 favorite differences.
Ooh.
You know how the number 4 people are drawn to?
Yeah. Top 4.
It's very mystical.
Top 4. Letterman did them. Yeah.
It doesn't have the divinity of the holy 3, nor does it have the neatness of the top 5.
Listen, we can all say it. The thumb isn't a finger. We hate it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fuck those hot dogs or
You're
sandwich
right.
thumbs
the thumb
or finger.
It's kind of its own little limb, really.
Yeah.
The way it articulates, it's really its own
it's
beast.
On its own
Don't okay. group it in with fingers. It's better.
I love this, and I wish we could keep talking about it, but unfortunately, I do have
thumb chums out there. Sound off.
To deliver. Okay, so I've divided into my four favorite differences. 1, character creation, a feast of feats. 2, critical success is a spectrum. I actually don't know if I'm using that word right.
Whoa.
3, the 3 action economy, aka an action so nice you can do it thrice.
Oh, man.
Nice.
4, feeling partial to the marshals.
Woo! Yes.
I have to say, I wrote just like a really dry version of it, and then last night, right before I went to bed, I'm like, let me change these titles as if I were Jake Hurwitz.
She did a Jake pass.
I did a Jake.
That's
take.
Cool.
You got to do a Jake take.
That's like an old trick that I had at school. Like my papers would be lackluster, but you do the binder, you do the clear cover, you spice it all up. Everybody
oh
thinks
God.
You did a lot more.
Translucent binder. Can't go
I
wrong.
I came in. I made some spicy headers. Okay.
I hope everyone is picturing Emily like on a stage wearing a pantsuit, like doing a, a key. keynote address.
Doing my TED Talk?
Yeah.
Here's a TED Talk about an RPG system I haven't even played yet.
You're teaching us. We know even less.
I'm essentially pitching it to you guys. Right. Yeah. And again, we're going to get things wrong. Yeah. Starting with number one, character creation. Okay. Both creating and leveling up your character is riddled with ways to customize. Your PC is less beholden to the subclass of the class that you choose and more juiced up with feats. We've kind of talked about this.
Right.
The entire time you're leveling up, you're choosing feats along the way. You're never choosing between an ability score improvement and feats. Every level, you're getting 1 to 2 ancestry, class, and or general feats.
That is wild.
Yeah, the amount of feats in this game is insane. If you go onto Archives of Nethys, that's a really good resource for exploring the Pathfinder system. And if you look up feats, there's over 3,000.
Totally. And also the feats aren't quite, if you're coming at it with a D&D 5e brain, which like I am, the feats aren't exactly one-to-one with, you know, like feats in D&D. It's more like the feats are what you would get in your character class stuff and everything. Like you don't get Oath of the Ancients. You're just like, I'm a champion. And now when I'm level 1, I get to choose between these 4 different things.
It's like at first level, you're getting kind of skill proficiencies, weapon proficiencies, extra hit points, maybe cantrips. There's even one that you get a pet hyena at first level for
first level hyena?
Ancestry. Those are gnolls, that's an ancestry feat for a gnoll.
Yeah.
That's great. So rad.
So cute. At middle level, you start to get things like you can get quickened casting. Monks get something called sleeper hold. You can get electrified armor. At the highest levels, you're getting wings, you're getting teleportation, you're getting demon's hair that can attack people, you're getting the ability to turn into a cloud dragon.
This is a grocery store full of options, kind of like choosing level per level, like what sort of character you want to be. That seems great because like, I don't know, sometimes I find like, oh, I want to like multi-class so that I can add a little flavor or like I wish I had like a different ability because of like how I'm feeling. And it seems like you can really kind of like customize your character to like the mood you're in level to level.
What it feels like is that Pathfinder is saying, hey, you know your character better than your subclass does. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. What a compliment to me. Okay. Finally, a book that respects me.
I'm just picturing you reading books and them closing on your finger and it hurting.
Ow!
Quit bullying, guys.
What does that word mean? I guess I gotta look it up in a dictionary now. Ow!
Covered in cuts and not knowing any of the words.
I'm going back to video games.
Speaking of classes, I also wanted to shout out that there are some really cool classes that are unique to Pathfinder.
Ooh.
On pathbuilder2e.com, they're under the expanded list. So there's 10 new classes that I, a shameless novelty junkie, have never seen before, and it felt so good. The first one actually isn't that different because there is something like that in D&D, so just like, okay, fine, whatever.
Give us a taste. Give us a taste.
Gunslinger, Inventor,
Sick.
Investigator,
yes.
Magus,
mm-hmm.
Oracle, Psychic, Summoner,
uh-huh.
Swashbuckler, Thaumaturge,
yep.
And Witch.
Sign me up for one of each.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a game of Pathfinder and I'm going to die a lot.
Summoner sounds sick.
Yeah, Summoner is like, it's basically you get this little, almost like a familiar that you fight with in battle. They're called like an Eidolon or something.
Whoa.
But obviously you can call them whatever you want.
So that is like very Final Fantasy Summoner style.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome.
Oracle also sounds like very intense. Like that's, you could eventually like predict the future, isn't that?
Yeah, Oracle was one of the ones that I looked at that I was like, I'm desperate to play this. It's basically like a cleric adjacent charisma caster who is cursed, and you derive your power from the mystery of things like time and love and flame and bones.
Yeah. Bones?
Yeah. I want to be a fucking bones or
one of those is a little more concrete than the other ones. I love to contemplate the nature of time and also and bones.
And bones.
What are bones?
Oh, those are all like separate subclass, a separate like.
Just go, I just want to play a character that stares off pensively thinking about bones.
Teacher, I'm ready. Tell me, what are bones?
Tell me about bones.
I also really liked the Thaumaturge, which is a martial class that's obsessed with the collection of esoterica and mystic implements.
What?
So it's like very heavy, arcane, esoteric flavored, like, martial class.
So they're like an arcane antiquer?
Yeah.
That's right.
From my impression, yeah.
Just going to like curio shops?
Yeah.
Just like getting as many monkey paws as they can get their hands on?
Amazing.
Love it.
We're going to get into more of the nitty gritty of character creation minus archetype, which is something, it's a whole nother way to get more shit for your character that I haven't looked into yet.
Yeah.
But we're going to do that probably for the Patreon. I had you guys each write little paragraphs of hypothetical characters you wanted to play, but let's move on.
Yeah. Okay. Patreon.com/NADPOD, by the way.
Yeah.
NADPOD, don't sing yet. Don't do it.
we are excited to hear more.
We've ever had a don't sing
yet. And that's the end of the episode. Thank you.
Okay, number two on Emily's list of top four favorite things.
Hey.
Top four fave. We've got critical successstrum, a.k.a. success is a spectrum, a.k.a. let's get critical, a.k.a. degrees are the bee's knees.
Very good.
Okay. That's me doing a Jake impression.
Let's go.
All equally God good.
Damn, we got to collab sometime. This is really good stuff.
So, critical success works differently in Pathfinder than it does in D&D. I know, it's scary. I hear you shouting. I felt that way.
Do you use the
20-sided
die? You use the 20-sided die, right?
Yes, Jake, you
use
do.
A 40-sided die.
What? Thank God.
You use animal bones.
You roll with triple disadvantage, but also advantage.
Every roll is a coin flip
in
Pathfinder. Okay.
I'm calling my Lyft. Thanks, guys. This was fun.
Can I take this cheese?
Yeah, you can.
With a simple 17-sided die, you too can learn how to crit.
Okay, these are all jokes.
Yeah, these are not all real jokes. Not real.
You use we're talking a D20, about an actual system. But success in Pathfinder isn't a pass-fail binary like it is in D&D. It's not like, here's the DC. The DC is 15. If you get 15 or higher, you succeed. If you get 15 or lower, you fail. You can critically succeed, regular succeed, fail, or critically fail. So if you roll 10 points or more higher than a DC, it's a critical success. So you don't have to roll a nat 20. If the DC is 15 and you roll a 25, that's a critical success.
Mm-hmm.
If you roll 10 points or more lower than a DC, it's a critical failure. So how does this play out? Okay, this might sound like a lot right now. Let's just use a basic spell with a standard saving throw like Burning Hands.
Okay.
Murph, I'm actually going to throw to you. Would you please roleplay me the climactic scene of a bad guy using a first level Burning Hands on an adventuring party?
Yeah, you got it.
You guys came into a tavern and you became fast friends.
You'll never be able to defeat me. I'm a living snowman and I'm here to save the world.
And I'm his carrot nose and you're not gonna do anything to hurt us.
You think that, but a snowman killed my father and I'm here to take revenge on all snowmen.
Shit.
Yeah, that's right. It's me, John.
Oh, dude, it's John!
The council fought against the decision to kill your father.
I'm the mage, John, and I remember everything you did to the humans, you snowman piece of shit.
We regret that decision. It weighs on our icy hearts.
I cast Scorch.
He's onto us. Run, Frosty. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Heavily copyrighted. Change your name. I cast Burning Hands on Frosty John.
Okay. So first off, I just want to say that, like, if that roleplay scene you guys just watched didn't get you into Pathfinder, I don't know it will. Because actually, that is all from the Pathfinder lore. I'm kidding. So let's say the DC is 15. Everyone rolls their save. A 25 or higher is a critical success, which means you take no damage from the Burning Hands.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great, because how many times have you crit on a save
and you still take half?
And you still take half,
like a fireball.
What a waste of a crit.
Mm. Yeah. If you pass in D&D, if you pass on like a fireball deck save, then you would still take half if you even if you crit or something like that. In this case, you can have a critical success where you take none, or you get a regular success, which is you take half, right?
So if you get a regular success, so basically 25 or higher, critical success, you take no damage from Mage John's Burning Hands.
Right.
15 to 24 is a regular success. You take half of 2d6, which is what the Burning Hand spell is.
Great.
6 to 14 is a regular fail, and you take the 2d6 damage. 5 or lower is a critical failure, and a critical failure on saving throws against spells means you take double damage. So you take 4d6. Now, this goes for you as well as the monsters that are fighting you. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of this?
Well, I do have one question. Yeah. Would Frosty be rolling with advantage because he's with his carrot nose familiar?
We are going to actually have to talk about advantage.
Yeah.
It basically lets you crit on spells, right? Like it's...
Stuff with saves, yeah.
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 Yeah, like if someone you're casting a spell on critically fails their save, that's the equivalent of you critting on a spell
attack.
Exactly. That's tight.
It's really tight.
And does that count for attacks as well? If you're just doing a melee attack and you're like, I rolled a 32 and somebody's AC is like 18, then you crit?
If you beat their AC by 10 or more, that's a critical no matter what you rolled on the die.
Wow. That's awesome.
Okay. However, I can't speak to what happens if you critically fail on attacking someone. There might be a consequence, but I haven't looked into it yet.
Interesting.
And if you still roll a nat 20, that still counts as a critical success?
So that is a thing that I have not looked into yet. Okay. And I was going to throw to you guys, because I feel like maybe a lot of parties will be like, hey, we have an instinctual guttural joy
that's
20 and seeing the one. I don't know if someone who plays like the Pathfinder system is so cohesive within itself that I would be cautious to change too much, but it's something that going into it I would probably look in and be like, hey, is this some, can we keep the nat 20 and the nat 1 as crit?
Yeah.
Or will that disrupt?
We're followers
the
of Dice Christ.
Yeah,
and Dice Christ
has told you that you crit.
System agnostic, I would hope.
I believe that a $20 bill has more value than a 50 because of the 20 on it.
Yeah. This is
you gave me all your cash.
Yeah.
And then I also have a out of combat example. There's a lot more actions in general that we're gonna talk about in the three action economy section, but there's a thing called treat wounds. If you have a healer's tools and you spend 10 minutes treating an injured person, you can do a medicine check. That's right. You can just do a medicine check to heal someone rather than potion or spell. So it's really nice.
So like anybody can do a medicine check and heal someone?
If you have healer's tools, you might also need to be trained in medicine.
Right.
To make it worthwhile.
That's
probably.
Great, though. And that seems like it feeds into the martial thing you were saving for, I believe, agenda item 4.
Yes. I think that Pathfinder in general does a great, great job giving you non-magical tools and ways to interact with the world so that you're not just always being like, well, I'm a barbarian and there's nothing I can do in a social encounter.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so if you were to do treat wounds, you do a medicine check, and on a critical success, the injured person regains 4d8 hit points. On a regular success, 2d8. On a regular failure, nothing happens. On a critical failure, the target takes 1d8 damage.
Just like your malpractice. Yeah. It's true. I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Sure happens.
You're just like accidentally shoving your finger into someone's wound.
Oh, God. I was going to say it's like dropping somebody that you're carrying.
Yeah.
You had to bring it to an extremely visceral point.
Yeah. Giving someone maybe the Heimlich that is not choking.
Yeah.
You accidentally spill your coffee on the wound while you're working.
See, everything that we're saying right now, it's why the sort of degrees of success feel so fun for role play.
Yeah.
Because it really gives you an idea of what way they fail.
I was like inherently skeptical of it because I was like, this is a lot of math to do like during every step.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like once you kind of like have it internalized in your brain, it really does open up the possibilities.
The system also does a really good job making DCs really clear for you. For example, we'll talk about it later, but there's a thing you can do in battle with one of your actions, which is called recall knowledge. Mm-hmm. And you can basically look at a monster and try and do a recall knowledge check to try to remember like a weakness of theirs.
Whoa.
And every single monster comes with a recall knowledge DC. Every single monster that I looked at on Archives of Nethys.
So depending
on how rare they are and stuff like that.
So if you're a DM, you don't have to make that DC. It's right there for you.
Mm-hmm. And so like every monster does have kind of like a built-in like weakness that you can exploit a little bit?
They do a good job giving things weaknesses and immunities. And I would have to look at it more. Again, I was really trying to do a general overview, but it is like, you can basically use the recall knowledge, and if you critically succeed, you get like a weakness and like maybe what their one other piece of information about them. If you succeed, you get one piece of information. I think if you critically fail, you get something false.
I love that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of playing a new game and just being a little dumb again, like just not knowing all of the ins and outs.
Yeah.
Because just like we've all well, most of us, we've all like either DM'd or bailiffed at this point.
Some of us have only bailiffed. That's right.
Yeah, some of us have never bailiffed.
That's true. Each of us has our own skill set.
The
is what
burden,
I'm saying.
The burden of bailiffing. Only Jake and I know.
But you just like kind of get exposed to so much of like the inherent knowledge and like to go in like fresh with fresh eyes and fresh brain.
It's been a really fun system to look into.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I think especially when somebody, it happens a lot to us where it'll be like, that's a 29 to hit or something like that. And that should feel special. It is a double-edged sword, right? Because it does kind of take away from the simplicity of just like, you crit and you do double damage, like you roll the nat 20. Mm-hmm. That's a very fun, just everybody jumps up and is excited. But I do like, on the other hand, being like, you know, I got a 30 to hit, that actually meaning something is cool.
It's those moments when someone so exceeds something that you're like, damn, I feel like I should reward that.
It's built in. Taps into just like a 30 persuasion bit. Check to like, you know, get somebody to give you a peanut. Like, that should be a massive
They give
success.
You their house.
Yeah. They're fucking taking you on a tour of the farm.
He turns into Balnor and joins the party.
Jimmy Carter's on your party now.
My only concern is ever doing something to upset Dice Christ. Yeah. So as long as you're as long as you're feeling like there's still space for the nat 20.
The nat 20, I'm still, the nat 1.
I do like the window of like critically succeeding.
And as you look through the book, it's like a ton of spells and actions you can take, spell out what happens and critical successes and critical failures. Mm-hmm. So it's baked into the game.
Yeah.
Like it also does, it feels like it's rewarding for like your character build too. Like if you build someone to be optimized at like climbing something or investigating something and you're consistently getting like 10 over a DC, you want to be like, damn, you are like kicking ass every single time.
It's true. Yeah.
This really feels like when you go to your friend's house for a sleepover and then like you go to church with them on Sunday and they go to a different church than you. And it's just like,
I know exactly what you're talking about. For real.
You're with me.
And I know what you're talking about.
Somebody whips out a guitar and you're like, wait a minute, is this allowed? We're having a little fun at church.
This never happened.
Okay, so Caldwell Tanner is saying that Pathfinder is when the guitar comes out at church.
Wow.
I have distinct memories of going to church with friends after sleepovers. God, why?
So moving on to the pièce de résistance. I think I pronounced it.
It's actually a pièce de résistance.
Piece de resistance of this system. The three action economy.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. AKA three to be me.
I'm three. Do what I want.
So, the three action economy. That's right. Pathfinder is done with action bonus action. You have not one, but three actions and a reaction per turn in combat. I have to tell you, don't get too excited. There are some caveats for what you're thinking right now. Okay, but let's focus on what it is designed to do before we bring those up.
Yeah,
okay.
Jake, calm the fuck down, dude.
Does anyone...
Sit down, dude.
For everyone at home, I was pacing.
Anyone who's sitting there being like, great, I can attack three times. I totally understand where your heart is at. I love that. I respect
that. We love that for
you. Mm-hmm. I love that. But that's not what this system is designed to do. And we'll get to that.
It's fair.
Because let's be honest, a lot of D&D combat is just hitting and getting hit, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely fun. There's no shade. We love to bang. But it, we love to bang.
Me and my crew?
We love to stand and bang.
Mm-hmm. We love to clang, love to bang.
But it,
love killing lizards. What can I say?
But it does put pressure on the DM and even the players to go out of their way to make fights memorable when the mechanics are repetitive and to role play when the mechanics don't even reward it, right?
Right.
Ooh.
Like a lot of times you're like, well, I'm going to say something mean to him and you just do it. And it's maybe your DM says, I guess give me an intimidate check, but often they don't.
Right.
Yeah.
And that would take, if you were going by rules as written, that would probably, it would take an action to do a check usually.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. For example, a lot of times new players are actually more creative than the rules even support. Like they might be like, oh, I'm in my very first fight, my very first D&D game. This guy's swinging a huge axe at me. can I just disarm him?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In D&D, the answer is usually like, I think you can. If you fail, there's your turn and that will suck. In Pathfinder, however, the answer is yes. There are clear parameters of success and consequences. And if you fail, you still have two actions left.
Oh.
So, for example, disarming becomes its own action in battle.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so it, normally in 5e, it can be a little complicated in that, like, you can disarm somebody, but then you're like, okay, so then what happens? Do you can then maybe use a free action to grab the axe, and then you guys are just, like, going back and forth, and that gets a little dirty. Mm-hmm. And in Pathfinder, it's very nice because it's not as, you know, powerful as just, like, knocking a weapon out of somebody's hand, but it's nice to just have those parameters of just being, like, you succeeded, they get a -2 to their attack now because their, like, grip is loosened. Oh.
And, like, yeah, in general, Pathfinder's three-action economy is filled with, like, really cool skill-based actions that change up the battlefield and can even be an opportunity for roleplay in some battles. So there's, like, a lot of strategic kind of combat actions like trip, grapple, feint, which have mechanical implications. But there are also really fun things like demoralize, recall knowledge, which we talked about, or create a diversion that can actually be role played. And then you roll for it at the end and it has an actual consequence.
Right.
Mm.
So, like, that's yes, awesome. It's fun to hit someone with a sword a bunch, but it's equally fun to use recall knowledge to learn the weakness of a succubus. Demoralize said succubus with your knowledge of their weakness, and then for your third action, take out your cold iron sword, which you know they are weak to, and handily skewer that succubus.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Oh. So say you're like battling a crocodile outside of a sunken keep or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And the crocodile opens its mouth. And like for your first action, you want to like break a javelin and shove it inside the crocodile's mouth. So like, would that be classified as one of these?
I think the move that you're talking about is going to really come alive in a system like Pathfinder.
Boy,
I would have known how to deal with Caldwell Tanner for the first
there's 30 episodes. I think there's literally an action that's called force open. So you can use an action to force open and then interact with an object to put the javelin in the mouth.
Oh,
it's for shenanigans.
Cheese and
it's
biscuits.
Built for shenanigans.
Mechanized shenanigans.
From what I can tell, the system is designed to make combat more dynamic and put more tools in your kits and even kind of weaponize your skills, which feels like the most fun part of it. So if I'm emphasizing that, it might just be because that's what speaks to me the most.
Uh-huh.
Both in and out of combat, Pathfinder seems to reward the skills that you invest in more. And I just think that's fun, personally. Yeah. Like,
it's
it's
instinctual as you, like, when you start playing. I remember this when I started playing D&D too.
Yeah.
You'd be like, okay, I want to stomp on this guy's foot. Or I want to, like, say, I don't know, create a distraction or something.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily something you can do. You just have to make your move and commit to it.
So, like, I don't think we even talked about it. Demoralize is like a really powerful thing that you basically can be like, you don't want this fucking fight. And you can do that as an action, roll an intimidation against their will save, and basically give them levels of fear.
Whoa.
Right. And if you fail that and they're like going to fight you anyway, you still have actions to
You still have prepare. Two actions. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's great.
So it's like, nice because, you have to often make a choice of like, okay, can I try to like save this situation or are we like, are we going to enter combat and I'm going to basically waste my turn by being like, trying to convince someone not to fight.
Hey everybody, it's Emily here to talk to you about Mint Mobile. It's spring cleaning. We're getting rid of the things that don't serve us anymore, and you know what doesn't serve anyone? Expensive phone bills. If you'd like to declutter your finances, it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/pawpaw. That's mintmobile.com/pawpaw. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/pawpaw. PAWPAW. $45 upfront payment minimum required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Goodbye, sweeties.
Hey there, Nadpoles. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content all in one place and all on your terms, folks. They've got beautiful templates and easy drag and drop tools. You can make a portfolio, you can make a blog, you can make a web series over there. You can do anything you want, and you can do it all on Squarespace. So head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/pawpaw to save 10% on your first order of a website or domain. That is squarespace.com/pawpaw to save 10% on your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/pawpaw. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
So everybody has the space to try something out.
Yeah.
I like that really a lot. And
there are also you mentioned it briefly that there's like levels of fear and things like that.
Yes, I haven't looked into this enough, but I know that I saw things with like stun one, stun two. And this is a thing that we've constantly been talking about in D&D is like stunning is too powerful, and like a lot of our D&D core case submissions are like, they stunned my bad guy and I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And with this, I think what they do with a lot of these conditions is they give them levels, so that the conditions get worse as you go. So essentially so it almost lets you start to stun someone, which seems cool.
It's very cool.
I'm starting to see why the book is 600 pages.
Yeah. Well, actually, the crazy thing is the book is 600 pages, but as I believe the rules lawyer, their YouTube channel pointed out, the section about playing the game is really only like 40 pages or something.
Oh, that's tidy.
Yeah, it's got a lot of options and things like that.
Like, we're like talking there's about a ton all of these spells, which I haven't even looked into yet.
That's great.
But I also think that like this combat system seems to also let you, I feel like from reading it, you could just go full charisma, put everything into intimidation, deception, and performance, literally never lift a weapon in battle and still contribute to the battle.
Just go full little stinker.
Or just go fully hot, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Like literally you could be mechanically rewarded for being hot in battle.
Finally.
Wow. My fucking dream.
Little stinker or a little steamer? You have options here.
Okay, so what are people thinking about this significant expansion of your toolkit in battle?
Does Pathfinder feel like you need more of a map, or is it translate to Theater of the Mind as
truthfully,
well?
Truthfully, I do wonder how it will translate to Theater of the Mind.
Yeah.
I think you would just end up finding out which actions felt more impactful in Theater of the Mind.
Right, there's certainly like abilities and like classes I would never take because like they don't feel good for Theater of the Mind. So I think it probably just like figuring out the play style that works for you.
Because I think things like demoralize, create a diversion, there's something called bon mot where you like basically just like say a quip at someone. That's like a feat you can take. You just like say a quip at someone and it like...
And they're like, whoa.
Yeah. okay. And so like stuff like that actually does lend itself to Theater of the Mind more.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I could see there being pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
And like on my character sheet, would I have like a will save too, and a bad guy could demoralize me?
Yes. Yes, you absolutely can. And that's why, and I think that they will do that too, because as I was looking through, there are things that like help buff you against being frightened, buff you against being talked down to.
Yeah. The pendulum swings both ways. Like there's more shit that you can do, but there's definitely more shit that can happen to you that you have to like, which I think that part excites me because you're really trying to like optimize your character knowing all of the shit that can happen.
Yeah. I am so glad to hear that you're excited, and I really want you to hang on to that excitement because we are later going to talk about the multi-attack penalty.
Oh.
And why at first it's horrifying, but if you like the system as much as I do, you're just hoping you can learn to love it. Okay, but first, let's wrap up.
I feel like you're trying to sell us a condo.
I'm trying to give you, like, I think it's probably going to be the biggest hurdle for a lot of people getting into the system. I have, after my top four, my four faves, I have a list of like three kind of like, these are the tougher pills
these
to
are
swallow.
The things you're,
these are the things that you're, if you're thinking about changing, your party's going to be like, but what about?
Yeah.
Right.
That you're going to kind of like go in knowing.
And it's just a different, it's a different game. I think, again, we're coming at this with D&D brain, and I think a lot of other people, you know, if you're making the switch or if you're playing both, will as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there is like, some of the stuff is a hurdle because you just have to unlearn D&D. And then some of the stuff is maybe loosening your power gamer grip on D&D and exploring maybe a more narratively satisfying, maybe slightly less easy to power game system.
Yeah. Although it seems like there are opportunities to power game here, certainly.
I would say that there's opportunities. Like if you want to just bang, do damage, I'm sure there are builds for that, but it feels like in combat, the things that are rewarded are teamwork more than an individual standing there and doing a ton of damage.
That's lovely. I like to hear that.
But yeah. Okay. Right. So let's wrap up my fave four. Number four, cast aside the casters. We're feeling partial to the marshals. That's my Jake take. It's almost jarring to come back to a Jake take. So I have been lurking. This actually kind of is a blending of a fave and a caveat.
Mm-hmm.
I've been lurking on some feedback. A Fabia. That definitely sounds like a fancy car.
A that's my bon mot. What do I do? I get advantage now?
Yeah. So I've been lurking on some feedback, and this one is quite literally a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
The general consensus I have read is that caster classes are less powerful to play in Pathfinder 2E. Oh. I've read quite a few crestfallen casters who felt that resource management of too few spells meant that the most economical thing to do was to just kind of buff. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we love to buff, but we also love to blast, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe a little better for buffing than blasting.
Yeah. Maybe buffing is shining more than blasting. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's build. Like, obviously, there's also so many options with Pathfinder that I'm sure that you can make options that blast. But if you're just going in and making a standard caster, you might find yourself buffing.
Right. And it's kind of, it's inevitable in most games. Like, at some point, a wizard can just like talk to gods and stuff, or just, you know, just divine something into existence.
Yeah.
And the fighter or the melee class is just like, you can attack one more time. It's just
but
like, that's great.
What I've read is that they've kind of chilled out the casters in a way and expanded the toolkit of the marshals in a way so that level 20 doesn't feel like, oh, the casters
are
more
powerful.
One's
a god and the other one's a good fighter. It's just like they're both good at their stuff.
So
yeah, I can go to other planets. I do 3d12.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna die.
But with the sort of feat system, you do end up getting access to a lot of magical stuff if you want it.
Sounds like there's a lot more Hercules and a lot less Zeus, as opposed to there being Zeus and regular humans. I don't know. This metaphor isn't working, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
So obviously, like, reading this was tough for me because I really like to cast and blast and be a magical little person. But
you were a crestfallen caster that day.
Yeah.
I was crestfallen reading these other crestfallen casters. But I thought about it. And Pathfinder, like I said before, it kind of reminds me of Star Wars 5e in that it's, like, really deeply, lovingly attentive to
Marshall. Yeah, because you played a melee character when we played Star Wars 5e.
What about for like half casters though? Like for a paladin or like even like an Eldritch Knight or something like that? Does that exist?
I don't know. Okay. Again?
Yes! I stumped her! Fuck yes!
Well, there's like, there's no paladin. Instead of paladin, it's champion.
But I don't know. I haven't looked into the champion to know if they, how magical they are.
Gotcha.
Like, for example, rangers are half casters or quarter casters in D&D. Rangers don't have spells in Pathfinder.
Ah.
So I can't say what's going on with the champion / paladin.
Yeah.
They have more tools in their kit in and out of battle. So like before I was kind of talking about a barbarian in Pathfinder, you can pretty easily make a barbarian with good intimidation because you are frequently training skills and your proficiency is tied to your level. So if you decide to be trained in something, which is their way of saying proficient, you're getting proficiency boosts every time you level up.
So it doesn't go with... Ooh. Okay. Does it also go with a stat as well? Like, would intimidation also go with charisma?
Yes. Yeah, but if you have a -1 to charisma, but then you train it, than as you go, that minus one doesn't hurt as much.
Got it.
Gotcha.
So Pathfinder has out of combat actions you can do with sort of the degrees of success. So for example, there's something called coerce, in which you spend a minute with someone trying to talk them into doing something. Let's say revealing the name of the boss they're working for, or leaving the back door to the Thieves Guild unlocked when they close up at night. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you roll your intimidation against their will save. If you critically succeed, they do what you're asking, as long as it doesn't harm them, and they won't try to get back at you right away.
Whoa. Oh, that's really cool that they have, that they actually give you kind of how to DM these moments.
Exactly.
That's helpful. Mm.
Exactly.
Man, that's helpful.
Yeah, it seems like this is like tailor-made to have like less narrative breaking moments. Like everything kind of supports the narrative a little more.
Yeah, and I've read a lot of DMs saying that they think Pathfinder is easier because there is so much, to borrow the phrase of the rules lawyer, rule support.
I like that.
Right. So I think that that to me makes it feel like marshals have all this huge impact outside of combat too.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think that's kind of the beauty of both systems, right? Is that I think that something like the three action economy, when you're looking at it, isn't as clean as just being like, here's your movement, here's your action, here's your bonus action. So the one is better to like kind of pick up and learn. And then I think once you're familiar with systems and familiar with like TTRPGs, mm-hmm. then something like the three action economy, you're like, oh, this kind of has more to it.
Yeah.
Like there's more I can do here now that I know what I'm doing and now that I've experience in things like this.
And again, I'm suggesting this as someone who's never played, but this is what I would do for my first game is like, put out a little list of the different actions you want to focus on. You don't even need to put all of them out there yet, right? Just put out a little list so that your players at the table have a little list to be like, it's my turn. I have three actions. What do I want to do? Oh, there's the little list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe you have that out for a couple times and then people start finding out which ones they like doing the most.
Yeah, like a card you'd get in a board game or something that just says like the rules.
Yeah.
To get people used to like the new actions and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just put it next to the chips.
Yeah. Okay. So I think now is time to, I kind of already talked about, it's time to swallow some tough pills.
Okay.
Before we do that, I did have one question.
Yeah.
Which was about stats, because it seems like stats are a little different.
They're a little different in terms of, well, your ability scores are the same as D&D, but your saves, you only have three, reflex, fortitude, and will.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So, and I can't give you too much context for how those are calculated because that's just not one of the things I
It's pretty intuitive.
Yeah, it's pretty intuitive. It's like,
it seems nice, right?
It's essentially like combining them down. It's normally there are like six stats, so it's combining each one down by two, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, I've never really understood charisma saves. Like, I get them for like a persuasion, maybe, but like getting banished because you failed a charisma save makes no sense to me.
Yeah. It's interesting. That actually is a really good point.
Yeah. You're just not very likable.
Too charming to be banished.
You're not hot enough.
Be gone. To ugly hell.
Okay. Any other questions before we go swallow some tough pills?
I'm down to swallow some tough pills.
I'm ready for my medicine.
Big, tough, my gullet's wide open. Pills. Okay. So I already talked about the casters.
Yeah.
Advantage. Okay. Is everyone?
I can handle it.
Everyone relax so your throat muscles
take
down this tough pill.
What the fuck's happening to advantage? Wait a second.
So
what the fuck is happening to advantage?
So I get the impression, again, maybe someone will say, Emily, you dunce. Pathfinder's lousy with advantage.
Hey.
But I got the impression from what I read that advantage is way less common.
Yeah.
For example, if you want to give someone the help action, that's called aiding someone.
Okay.
And you basically just give them a plus one or a plus two if you crit, and you might even subtract one if your like little skill check to help them
fails. So it's more like bless.
I don't know that there's like a good D&D equivalent for it. Mm-hmm. It's basically just like aid is something you can do in battle as one of your actions, but it is less, it is not giving someone the help action.
Right.
Cool. Are DCs like generally lower, like to the point where a plus one or plus two would help at all?
The thing is that skills are way higher, right? So since your proficiency is your level, it means that your skills are going up every single level and you're training them to be trained to then expert. If you're like level 10 and you're trained in something, you're 10 plus whatever the modifier is.
So the idea is like if you're building your character efficiently, you shouldn't need advantage on stuff.
Yeah,
I think that is what it is. That is the impression That I get.
It would seem to me that the system is less dependent on rolls than 5e is, which is like both. There's room for both systems. I think the one is a lot simpler. And I think it's also cool to just be like, no, you build your character for a particular thing. And thus you should succeed more if you're good at that.
Yes.
And stuff like help actions are, it's exciting because you get that gamut of like, maybe you'll roll a one and a nat 20. But at the same time, it is like kind of wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, it's just like, you're going to get a little bit more consistency. You might not get those highs and lows, but your character does what they're built to do.
Yeah.
Is cool.
There also is something built into Pathfinder called hero points that allows you to reroll something. So the idea is that you start every session with one hero point and you can be given them by your GM during the game, almost like inspiration.
Great.
From what I've read, GMs are encouraged to give out about one per hour. So these hero points are a part of the game for Pathfinder.
It's like gold stars.
It's like gold stars. Well, that's what, when I read it, I was like, I don't really like the name hero points.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, but it actually is a really fun system to tailor to specific characters.
Yeah.
If Murph is playing a paladin, then it's like, oh, your god shines on you. It's like you almost tap into your god. So it's you don't have to use the word hero point unless you like the word hero point, in which case, fucking around with
and it's
it.
Cool.
I love
they're,
that for you.
They're actually, D&D has in like the alternative rules, because remember in campaign one, we did like healing surge and things like that.
Yeah.
They do have something like hero points, and there is something cool
about
that.
And there's inspiration,
that.
Right? Which is apparently a D&D thing that we just don't use.
Yeah, it's true. But it is cool because it is like your players are special, right? Like they are kind of, you know, they're Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Aragorn's rolling hero points all the time. Like he's got plot armor.
When he talks to that ghost army, he burned through two hero points. I guarantee you.
The rest of his party
is
jealous.
I can get into this as long as I'm fed a steady diet of hero points.
Yes. That's what I'm thinking, is that like, I think that advantage is going to be less frequent, but I think it might be more special.
Yeah. Emily, you pitched this as a bitter pill, but you've given us like a big bowl of honey to dip the pill into.
I really tried to sugarcoat these
stuff
pills.
It's sliding down my throat so easy.
So Jake, do you think you could be open to it? Like, let's say you sat down for a session, you would start with one that you could choose to use anytime, and you'd probably throughout the session get another one. So you basically it's almost like getting luck points, really.
Yeah, it is. It's a luck point, yeah.
The pill wasn't going down easy at first, but now that I know about hero points.
I heard you go silent. I heard me lose you.
I was texting you on the side. I said,
Jake, you know, met D&D in high school. They got together. They've been together ever since. It would be like cheating if you left D&D at this point, you know?
It is truly the basis for all of Jake's, like, gaming knowledge, because even we were talking about video game skill trees before, Jake's like, never seen it before.
So this Mark said, like, Aragorn had hero points and I was back. Yeah.
All comes back to Aragorn.
Yeah.
And look, it's possible someone would say, actually, we use advantage a lot. I could be wrong, but when I read it, the system feels like, because especially if you're like at level 10 rolling like plus 15 to certain or like plus 12, like then you don't really need advantage.
It would appear to me as an outsider that it's a system more built for
consistency
and 5e is built for simplicity.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Both are great. Well, both are great cities to be.
I wish I wrote that. That was good.
Bon mot action right there.
Okay, so let's end this with the biggest, toughest pill.
Oh, it's so big, Emily.
Jake, I'm looking at you.
It's spiky.
Jake's, this is, I'm cool with all of this. It's a Jake and Emily thing. They love the big crits and just.
Oh, no, I'm cool. I'm cool with all of this. Yeah, I'm just aware that, like, you could have an instinctual, but advantage is how I've gotten by.
Yeah.
Okay. The multi-attack penalty. Oh. Let's talk about it.
Penalty.
Yeah. I know.
We got a picky eater over here.
Basically, you have three actions each turn, right? We love that.
Of course.
We're rich with actions. Mm-hmm. But if you were to attack or strike, which is what they call it, each action, the second time you attacked, you would have a -5 to hit. And the third time you attacked, you would have a -10 to hit.
That makes sense.
But you can still try and hit three times.
Yeah.
You can if you want. Mm-hmm. But
I think gut reaction for me, I think I'm totally quelled by the fact that I have more. I can do more creative stuff with my turn.
Mm-hmm. That fully is on board awesome. With it. Jake,
I think
you are smart.
It's a penalty for being like boring.
Yeah, totally.
It's not. That's what you have to do to be strategic in D&D. There's not really other stuff that you can do. So I play those characters, and I like to hit three times. I'll admit that.
Look at this. This is validating for me because I literally structured this entire little book report I've given so that we would end with Jake. To try and make the multi-penalty attack hurt the least.
Everyone give this big boy a round of applause. He swallowed that pill all by himself.
Yay. We're so proud of you.
He had a vitamin.
So yes, you're right. I really think that if you looked at like, why is it in there? Maybe the idea is it's hard to swing it that many times.
That to me makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if you look at it from a gameplay perspective, it's like, it's encouraging you to play interesting, not just hit.
But also like, I feel like if
you're swinging, gives you enough to do, then it is worth not attacking three times. And also there's other shit to do.
The games are built different, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to, if players are doing less damage, if they're attacking less, the monsters are going to have less HP. Yes. It's just the game is built different.
Also, yeah. I think that when I read this, it's like when you play 5e, because there are less ways to interact with a bad guy, you kind of got to kill him every time. In this, it feels like there are fights that just end with you disarming and demoralizing a guy.
Yeah, like there are mechanics.
And you're like, get out of here.
There are mechanics for Cheswick.
That's good. Yeah, less clanging and banging, more shaming and aiming and shaming.
Yeah, aiming and shaming.
Or even distracting, or you can like there's a feat that's like fascinating performance that you basically can like
start dancing
do a perform check and like kind of incapacitate someone by
thrusting.
Fascinating them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Thrusting. But there are weapons and stuff. Isn't there something called like the Swift attribute that like lets you attack more without penalties?
There are certain classes that reduce the multi-attack penalty. Yeah. There are certain feats that reduce the multi-attack penalty. And then there are weapons that have the trait Agile, which reduce the multi-attack penalty. I don't know if you can ever fully reduce it. But so I think it might still remain in some capacity. Maybe there's a way to fully negate it, but that probably wouldn't be till way higher levels.
But it does seem like if you just want to stand there and slash, you can optimize your character to be better at that.
God, this thing is balanced.
This medicine tastes like bubblegum to me.
It's all okay.
It's Pepto-Bismol.
Okay, this is validating. Okay, great. So let's start to wrap this up, and then we'll go over and do our character creation. Wrapping it up, I do feel like I should mention that Pathfinder also like has its own world and lore and gods. So if you're someone who loves to take a system that has really cool lore, it's called Galorian. I've only scratched the surface in it, but like the pictures of maps of it look awesome. I also haven't gone into any of the spells yet. This 637 page tome, there's a big chunk that's just spells. Woo! And a lot of them are different than I've seen before. I just haven't had a chance to dive into those yet. But I have also read that for DMs who prefer to kind of homebrew, a lot of anecdotal evidence that it is easier to homebrew in Pathfinder.
Wow. I would think the opposite.
There's more systems in place.
I think so. I don't know why. I just saw multiple GMs say, I switched over, and what I noticed is it's easier to homebrew.
Yeah.
Rad.
So I hope that this has been interesting. And if you're someone who has been thinking of experimenting with it, I believe it is slightly more complex than D&D. I will say that. But again, I think a lot of it is deceptively so. I think the three-action economy is different, but you will get the hang of it quicker than you originally think. You could even kind of go video game tutorial mode and slowly introduce these actions to your party.
Get
if
a whiteboard.
You want.
Yeah.
when we did 3.5 with Brennan, he would literally level up for us.
So that's what I was going to say. I actually think that although the part of this I'm drawn to the most is character creation, I think that it is the more complex thing. But when me and Murph played 3.5, literally we played it for a couple years, I didn't learn a thing about that system because our DM would just be like, you're leveling up. He wouldn't be like, here's all the feats you can choose from. He would be like, do you want to cast spells
like,
when you're in
do?
Wild shape?
Yeah,
I
want to
do that. Okay, you're going to take natural spells.
I will say, though, 3.5 was more complicated than this.
Was it?
Yeah, definitely. Pathfinder 2e definitely streamlines a lot of stuff. It's like a good balance.
This seems perfect because for me, tabletop is an excuse to hang out with my friends. And if you're giving me an excuse on top of that, which is like little DM private sessions where you discuss like what you're going to do with your character next.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was less about the system and it was the game had been out for so many years that there were so many supplemental books.
You know what? It was also really difficult to find stuff online.
That's
whereas
true.
There are a ton of online resources for Pathfinder, specifically if you're curious. Like I said, this pathbuilder2e.com character creation website. Obviously, change is always a little scary. At first, when I got onto it, I was like, I'll never understand it. Right. Within 5 minutes, I was like, okay, I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So that was a really great way to start to explore the ancestries and heritages and classes and feats. And also Archive of Nethys has just everything out there for free.
Yeah.
Mm. And we just walk into the Archive of Nethys. We don't need to like pass a trial.
You do have to pass a trial. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I did notice that one of your hands was singed.
Yeah, you had to fight a snowman.
Oh,
singed with cold.
Yeah, it was singed with the burning hand I summoned to take out the snowman that killed my dad.
Who goes there?
So we're going to actually look more at character creation on the short rest.
Should we tease our characters?
Yeah. Why don't you, do you guys want to read? I had you all write a paragraph. Do you want to read the paragraphs or do you want to just tease them with the name?
I think let's read our paragraphs.
Yeah, read the paragraphs. Yeah. Okay, let's do it.
All right, let me pull it up. Okay, I got mine. Scarl Cinderkeg. Scarl is a Charhide goblin gunslinger. He makes up for his lack of size with his ferocity and love of explosives. A virtuoso of crude inventions, Scarl is just as likely to exacerbate a problem as solve it. His fighting style requires juggling several lit fuses, life or death calculations, and defogging the giant welder's goggles that take up half his face. He would be a genius if he sat down and took his time, but he's quite literally a running powder keg.
Yes! I was really excited about this because when I first started doing my research, I went into Murph's room and I said, Murph, I need to play a goblin. I love the Pathfinder goblin.
I love goblins.
Goblins are good. Gob is good.
Caldwell?
Wilmer Honeybucket, a strange hermit who lives in a cabin made of monster bones. Wilmer earns a living hunting and trapping monsters that invade the human settlements near the primal forest he calls home. His weapon of choice is a large butterfly net that he swears can hold up to 3 gators easy. But he's also rarely seen without a bundle of rope and his trusty hunting knife. When it comes to monster hunting, Wilmer generally prefers to practice catch and release, but a lifetime in the woods has taught him that survival comes first, and as such, he's not afraid to get his hands dirtier than they already are. Wilmer does not own soap.
We love it.
Still, despite his profession, Wilmer has a love for all animals, big and small, but especially the big ones. His dream is to one day own a dog bigger than himself.
I love it. There okay, and now Jake.
Yes. Kask Nygaard is an artist from the North Country. He sings, he writes poetry, and he does Jackson Pollock-style splatter paint in his quaint cabin. But he's super intense about it. He thinks all the beauty of the world is urgent, and inspiration should be punching you in the face every day. He's super zealous whenever he talks about his creative process to friends and strangers. Don't you get it? It's all fleeting. We have to take in every drop while we can.
Whoa, man. God.
Nothing gets Kask more amped than talking about art, but nothing pisses him off more than people who would harm the very thing he draws inspiration from. Perhaps more meaningful than creating beauty in this world is killing those who hope to destroy it.
So these were the prompts I was given, and I will walk them through how I tried to bring their wonderful little men to life. And I also want to point out that Caldwell had sent me like 4 different ones, and one of them was a painter. And I was like, oh, Caldwell, Jake already chose a painter, so I think we can't do this one. And he was like, what the fuck?
That's kind of my thing, man.
That's kind of my thing, dude.
You don't really get art, dude.
My guy loves to draw. He's a doodler.
So anyway, we're going to be doing some PvP on the short rest.
No, we will not be playing, but we will be creating characters and talking about them. So if you want to hear that, head on over to patreon.com/nightpod. Don't sing yet.
Don't sing yet.
Fine.
Yes, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you to Em for putting this all together and for walking us through
it. Thank you.
Great work. I beg of you, Pathfinder people, to not be mad if I get things wrong.
We're fresh to the path.
Yeah, we're just here chatting about
make it a fun hobby that people can learn in.
Yeah.
Again, we're coming at this with D&D brain, so forgive us for constantly comparing things.
Don't at the path.
Both systems are great, and I think they both serve different purposes.
Yeah.
I think there's room for all of this.
Great.
Do you, Em, do you want to shout out your sources one more time?
Yes,
so anybody
I will.
Who wants to learn more about the system.
I will. The ones I use the most obviously were Rise of the Rule Lords. That was my exposure. That was my, I'm freaking out. What is this system? This book is so big. I believe the man who runs it, his name is Pete. Really enjoyed spending some time with you, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
The Rules Lawyer on YouTube. Known at Ones has really awesome breakdowns of all the classes.
Yeah.
That was really, really helpful. And then Archive of Nethys and PathBuilder2e.com. Those are the resources that I use the most.
Shout out.
Dope.
And then, we got some live shows coming up. Stuff in Australia, we still have some tickets for. We've got shows in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane.
Adelaide and Perth.
Yeah. Adelaide and Perth.
So
still
all
got
over the country.
Left. So be sure to check that out, nadpod.com/live.
Doesn't matter where you are, as long as you're in Australia, you can come and see us. and I would love to shout out some stuff from the P.O. box, if that's okay.
It sure. is.
Great. Lovely.
Means.
Thank you. Aaliyah and Kyle sent us a Foster style rubber ducky USB drive containing. It's literally, you can store digital files instead of potions in it. It's great.
That's so funny, but also so confusing. I'm picturing being like, Sid, look, a rubber ducky to take to the bath with you.
Enjoy.
She just takes all of our episodes and dumps them in the bathroom.
Why are they on here? The USB drive does contain a video footage of the first wedding dance that they did to One Big Bed.
Oh my God.
I think we might have seen.
I have seen some of them on Twitter
and stuff.
We've seen some
videos when people send us.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So this is a sacred duck. Yeah, this is a sacred vessel you've sent. Thank you. Kay from New Zealand sent us a copy of their partner Rim's solarpunk fantasy novel Fox Hunt. Seems right up all of our collective alleys. Thank you both so much for listening.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Tim Probert sent us a copy of their graphic novel Lightfall, as well as the D&D middle grade novel that they illustrated. They are both so wonderful. Tim, your art is incredible.
Oh, Tim, your art is so cool. I showed it to my nieces and they were enraptured.
Yeah. Ooh. Congratulations. You enraptured some children. Normally, it's not okay. Chris C. sent us a copy of their book, Tattered Pawns. It's about an end mage named Whistler. Undeniably a dope sentence. Thank you, Chris C. Yeah. Chris Corrigan. Molly B. sent us a collection of cute frog and mushroom pins, including one of a frog with a really plump ass. It is Saul to a T. Great. Thank you very much for that, Molly. Yeah, I haven't talked about Saul's ass a lot, but it's plump.
Mostly the washboard abs, but yeah, there's a rump on
that. We focus on the front.
Yeah, we've been focusing on the abs these days.
He's muscular all around.
Teo, a first grade teacher in Japan, sent us a postcard letting us know that they genuinely have a short and boisterous student in their class named Yugo.
No! Yeah. Oh, that's God. So
that's
awesome. May Yugo both delight and destroy you.
Uh-huh. I hope
it's
that
good
Yugo
to know
doesn't...
there's at least one good Yugo in this
room. Yeah.
I hope that they don't total party kill anyone. And then Jessica and Max sent us a nice note and pictures from their wedding, which also featured One Big Bed as the first dance. There's also a great picture.
Warms my heart.
Yeah. There's like a picture of them standing next to this like wooden plank with the lyrics painted on it. It is just delightful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so, awesome. So sick, whimsical guys. And perfect. Thank you so much for honoring us.
Thank you.
And thank you. Thanks for getting married. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah.
And that's all the P.O. Box stuff. 1920 Hillhurst Avenue, number 222, Los Feliz, California, 90027.
Sweet. And you can follow us on social media that we may or may not use, at CHMRSME, at Caldy's Caldwell, at AXFords Emily, and at Jake Roberts is Jake. And you can tweet about the show using hashtag NADPOD. That's NADDPOD.
Oh, here we go.
We are the youth of a nation. We are the youth of a nation.
And now it's time to thank our benevolent Council of Elders, starting with Brad D., Jeffrey S., Hugh C., later Mick Skater, Matt M., Jordan DJ, Cutter W., Feared Al, great name, Daniel G, The J Pod, Dylan B, here to tell you to crit on your homework, kids, and hashtag open D&D. Dungeon Mama, not sexual, Danielle, the dastardly dame, Beardman Dan, Danny P, Vincent W, Victor T, Balnor's boy, Dominic, Person, Justin I, Ragnar, Fairwind, TJM, Treylay, the Crayfay, Christopher B, Damiel R, cyborg version of Josh the Kobold, Murph being cucked by Sonic the Hedgehog, nice, Richard X Machina, Michael L, Jack L, Sam L, Nicholas C has starred in every single film ever made in Bohemia, tickets bought, can't wait to see y'all down under in Perth, hell yeah, us too, Samuel B, Mike H, Matthew E, Great Value Gemma, Adam G, Tyler F, Panama James, Andrew the Bard, nope, sorry, just Andrew the Druid here, Horadrian, Rex Thaniel, the White, Captain Sigil, Diana, DLL, CC Lulu, Hercule Poirot, the Rabbit Folk Detective, Timmy R, Lucas B, Rayco, It's Kevin, Calder's Cold Cum, hashtag Ride My Cumrades, Spread the Camaraderie, Patrick O, Taylor B, the Vengeful One-Winged Angel, Cass, Skateboard Cass, Captain of the Stevens, Stephen C, Mike K, Lady Taco, Brian G, Joy T, Nara K, Jake L, Nick W, Brave the Badger, Esme M, Foster the Boneless Duck, thanking the two crew for coming down under. We can't wait. William W, Aaron the Asshole Ranger, Big Bad Beardo the Mad, Eric McD, Anna Rama, Galad Roselle, the White Rose of Galateron, Power Shiver of Bohemia, Quiver Against the River of the Pea Shiver, Dominic Harvey J, Moonshine's Twin, wow, amazing, J Dragonborn, Joe Rowe, the Inapro Pro, the Sandrean, Ben A, Feldonis, John III, Dave H, Koala Bear, Catherine S, David K, Christian S, Dustin S, Connor F, Hawkeye Pierce, Bookbar's Assistant, Izzy F, Gagagio Jr., Brittany A., Jillian B., Marky Mark, the Marvelous Mining Engineer, Cat C., Kel Slay, Missa of House in Zunza, Ariel, the Occasional Mermaid, Selena N., a.k.a. Valacy Raptor, B. Perky Always, Pat L., Achutha A., Lauren H., Talia, Ryan S., The Bone Duster, Robert Crisp, Wyatt F., Telekitty Creations, Fan Illustrator, Insert Requests, you know what, can you just draw Caldwell, Ploops, Carly A., Suicidal Lobster, Addy K., Spam Gaming, who's going to both Boston shows, fuck yeah, Connor Savage, Russell H., Christopher J., Pebblepot to the Deriders, my first D&D party, may all of our adventures be wondrous, thank you for being my friends, thank you for being my friends, Salil, Jack M., Leviathan, BioQuart 7, Amber Dextrous, Sullivan H, Trubhop Dropper, Jack H, Crabster, Champion of Crod, Scuttling Sideways Towards Tomorrow, Fanderay, Garble the Moist, Lindsay W, Juicy Kiwi, and Jake's Fire Squire, Desire to Aspire to Spire Like Maguire. Okay, Valen, Carlin C, Emily S, Scrip Skipper, Harry Cox, nice, Noah the Bagel of all things, Everything Bago, the Eladrin who just wants to hang out with his pet badger, Stripey, Laura, Dandy, Eric B, Marcos P, Jordan P, the Occasional Crit Reporter, Cornt, a co-equal court solely for corn disputes, okay, Learns the Balance, Druid, Dayton M, Dakota JP, Frida M, Pagos, Betrothed, Self-Proclaimed, Faye Prince, Tracy P, the Crick Elf Librarian, Andy E, Holly Hyena, Kristen Z, the I Will Use What You Love Against You DM, Leah C, Paige H, Helen of Briz, May B, Pixel Stars, Akash Thakar, Kristen with a K, Cal, just Cal, Commodore Galaxy, Edison N, Russell H, a monk named Dilgo, yes, the whole thing, yes, every time, Neos and Simon, rolling death saves in Dreamland, has anyone heard his story in the shoutouts, can an elder find him before a nat 1, Keychains Pentium 2 processor, oh my god, Lorelei, the succubus, and Kira, her busty queen, Michael, the Esri pop idol, Morgan M, a peeling sticker, Stephen E, your friendly neighborhood, Yaunt and Yunkle, Andrew and Sid, John Adams, yes, like the president, Meg, the mail carrier of Bohemia, James F., Cap'n Cappy, M4L, Wayfarer, now trapped in the Feywild after not fully reading the terms and conditions of their legal settlement with Mothership, Andrew B., Buzzing Around, Sir Smut, Barpo Good Barrel, Barbarian, and Brewer Emeritus of Waterdeep, Mary B., C., Melora Devotee, Pendergreens, Bodyguards, Moldy, Codpiece, Welshlander, Garrett G., One Big Curd, Mr. D., Dana D., Sean J., Ethan B., Renee the Monster Captain, Hop the Dancing Rabbit, Hope's Dagger, the only dagger of hope, Olivia the Enchanting Bard, who will be totally making money, and a grand novel on the Duck Team, Tales with an on-the-go, all the stops show. Winter Slade, Michaela R., Riley S., Fico, Angry Wheat, the game itself that has finally found himself. Ya boy Anthony, who moved positions and can't listen to the podcast at work anymore. Aw, man, well, sorry and congratulations. Josh H., Jack the Jax, Jinking Rogue, On the Run with the Bahumia's Balls. All right. Mango Empanadas, James B., Trogdor the Burninator, Clementine T., Caleb L.S. This message has been brought to you by fairies in support of hashtag CCC. Happy birthday, Pixie. Ponderful the Pink Dragon, Alex R., Cantrip, Dumbledore, the bear wearing onesie with a bad back, Papa Wookie, MJ the BFG, Drinking Tea by the Sea, Dogs of Babel, Calvius Silverfang, Gino T, Mama Bell, the Silver Serpent herself, Fenir, Strawman, 18 Wheels of Rubber and Steel, Dr. Tulkas, Tizzy the Great, Derek D, Tristan G, Cal the Rabbit Runt, Jazzman and Fam, Architects of Pendergreen's Sick Plans, David N, Alpha Fortress, Alex K, Corn Daddy, the Starch Druid, Joshua P, Joshua P.S., Martin T., Alec Sande, and of course, Mandy K. Thank you all.